Chapter 32. Chance.
"For pity's sake, Salem," Erin scolded quietly, "you could have laundered your robes before coming into the presence of the First Mother of Rugoth and the entire Council of Padras. Well, minus three."
Salem sniffed his robe and then scratched his pitted face, tiny chunks of detritus falling out of his scraggly beard. "I can't hardly smell nothing at all any more, lad.
Is it bad?"
"Bad? Crippling is more like it,"
Erin complained to his plump companion.
"I had to scrub mine for 5 hours, straight after we buried that crusty old dead fisherman."
Erin doubted he looked much better than Salem. Their ministry to the worst of the downtrodden took them outside and into the dirt. The sun had tanned Erin's pale skin, and his wavy hair was long, dusty, and unkempt.
"My relations probably wouldn't recognise me."
They stood outside the large oaken doors that led into the great hall of Mikmir Castle. Salem continued sniffing his robes, finally shrugging his shoulders.
"Listen, acolyte,"
Salem whispered, and since he called him acolyte, Erin knew what came next would be a command.
"You just let me do the talking in there. A wrong word in front of the Padres will earn you a defrocking. I know my way round these uppity types."
"You forget," said Erin, "that I was an uppity type once before my blessed entrance into the church and assignment to be your acolyte. I can safely say that the crowd in the room behind those doors will find your tales of vomiting sea monsters and your morbid analogies a little less than wholesome."
Salem cuffed him on the back of the head, raising the eyebrows of the chamberlain and door guards.
"I ain't as stupid as all that, acolyte. Just 'cause I never ain't had a tutor don't mean I got schmite for brains. But curse it all, this rope is a bit tight round me waist."
"You've put on weight since we've been in Rugoth,"
Erin informed him bluntly, as Salem pulled and twisted the rope.
"You're actually going to have to untie and retie it one of these days."
Erin rubbed the back of his head.
"You just can't keep pulling it over your head."
"You can't untie this farging knot," Salem exclaimed proudly. "It is a special knot, taught to me by my first captain. Once tied, you can only cut it off."
"Nonsense," Erin disagreed. "Every knot can be untied with enough patience. And what would you ever want with a knot you can't untie?"
"Remember that fella and the angry lobsters?"
Salem reminded him gravely. Erin shuddered and changed the topic.
"You have those necklaces that belonged to Jen?"
"Yes," Salem said. "Course I do. Just a misunderstanding and all. They're just cheap stones. Don't be looking at me that way. We see him and I'll give him to him, I swear it."
The doors opened and several men they didn't recognize left hurriedly. The chamberlain, face skeptical, signalled them forward, turning to face the assembly. The Council of Padres sat at a long table before the dais, the First Mother behind on her wooden throne.
"I introduce Salem, pure man of the Church of the One, and Erin his acolyte."
"Come forward, please,"
the First Mother commanded. Salem threw back his shoulders and entered with a swagger more fit for a dock than a hall. Erin stared about in amazement. The hall was as beautiful a place as he had ever seen, but once he turned his eyes to the First Mother of Rugoth, nothing else in the room could beg for a glance. She was younger in appearance than he'd heard, and beyond divine. Salem was either oblivious or unaffected by her stunning appearance.
"First Mother,"
Salem intoned heartily, bending slightly at the waist,
"and Council of Padres, we poor, pure men."
And then he saw her. Erin tried not to laugh as he gaped. His mouth still thought it had words left to speak, and it moved up and down silently in a fair imitation of a fish.
"Pure man Salem,"
one of the Padres chided angrily. By his stole, Erin knew this had to be Padre Athan, head of the council. Erin roughly elbowed the stunned Salem in the ribs.
"What? Oh, yes, but mighty Eldaloth," Salem exclaimed. "Have you ever seen a fairer creature? Boggins and body ho!"
Erin had no idea what that meant and wished it the incantation of some spell to kill them both on the spot. The embarrassment would probably do it first. The First Mother's protector did not appear pleased, and the First Mother was obviously not in good humour.
"Get hold of yourself, pure man,"
Athan roared again, standing.
"Where is it you serve? Where is your congregation?"
"Ah, yes, your grace,"
Salem said, recovering himself. "'Tis the road,
the ditch and the alley where we tread, amongst the congregation of the diseased, daft and downtrodden, lending a hand and a kind word when enough, I understand,
Ethan cut him off, returning to his seat.
It smells as if you brought some of your congregation in with you. When you can be in no doubt of why you are here, pure man, you are the only surviving witnesses to the incident yesterday morning, and we would have your account of it, starting with why you were near the event in the first place.
Yes, well, Salem began. You see, Erin, my acolyte here, and I often must go to Baneborough Cathedral, bringing in the disfortunate and mistrodden, and it just so happened that we shows up that morning with this beastly old schnogger in our wagon who barks like Mickick's own hound when he's not scratching himself and howling like he's just got a swift kick twixt the legs. Found him outside this tavern, and the funny thing was he was crawling round on all fours, sniffing around and lifting his leg to take it.
Erin elbowed Salem again.
Right, well, there we were at Baneborough, banging away at the door for Prelate Shefston. Well, he never comes, so Erin and I figure he ain't risen yet. So we sit to wait him out, when from round back comes a prison coach and three padres, and a score of church soldiers. We'd heard rumours of an execution, so we just sort of followed them from a discreet distance, thinking they had something to do with it. So there we was, Salem recounted, voice turning dramatic, bouncing along the damned quarter as pretty as you please when we noticed something suspicious.
Salem paused. For too long.
Out with it, Ethan demanded. A cat, an orange cat, no less, following along.
Ethan threw up his hands. For mercy's sake, man, a cat. Acolyte, perhaps you'd like to finish the story? Salem scowled in disappointment and surprise.
It is true, Your Grace, Erin corroborated. There was a cat, and it was behaving strangely, and believe it or not, it is actually relevant.
Yes, Salem jumped in quickly. You see, I ain't never seen a cat follow anything for that long. And then I see with my keen eyes that everywhere it steps it leaves black paw prints on the ground. So I comment to Erin here, who thinks I'm drunk, not that I get drunk any more, till he watches the odd little beastie for himself. Suddenly, Salem said so loudly and abruptly that the first mother jumped, the prison wagon stops, and the crazy blighter we got in our wagon starts barking something fierce, jumps out the wagon, and starts chasing the cat down this alley. Well, me and Erin give chase, of course, hoping to reel him in afore he hurts himself. We find him at the end of the alley. The fellow's got the cat, and the cat is a-screaming and a-scratching and putting up a ruckus. The man is thrashing about until he sinks his teeth square in the throat of the animal. Then poof!
He paused again.
What? What? Ethan yelled. He burns to ash. Burns until there ain't nothing left that the toddler of a wind can't carry away. Cat is just lying dead. Well, we scratched our heads on that one, you can be sure. But we hears this screaming back from the street, so we run that way, and as I got some experience in not being stupid, we don't just go running into the street. So we peek round the corner, and all the soldiers and the padres are shaking round on the ground and thrashing. And then they stop. Erin here, of course, wants to be running out to see things, but I ain't that dumb. The back of the prison coach door opens, and this man with Mickick's eyes jumps out with this girl, and they run off through the streets just as quick as can be. We wait a while longer. Folks start coming out of houses, and we go check on the padres. Still alive, but slobbering and yabbering like infants. The soldiers was all dead.
Is that all? Ethan asked.
That be the whole of it.
Doesn't tell us much more than we already knew, Ethan said disappointedly.
Except one thing, the first mother interjected, that they intended to use the cat as the focus of the attack. We owe a great deal to your crazy blighter.
Erin felt he could lose himself in that voice.
We do at that,
Salem agreed, smiling strangely at the first mother.
You are free to go, the first mother said.
Salem bowed and turned to leave, but Erin held him back.
Forgive me, Highness,
the acolyte began, Salem looking worried.
But we have something we need to deliver to Jen.
Ethan lifted his head from his notes. Erin continued.
It is nothing of much consequence, something of his he must have had when he escaped from Tell.
Speak to the Chamberlain and he will see it delivered, she ordered, face questioning.
and while you are here, feel free to take a meal in the common room.
Thank you, Highness.
With that, they left. It took some prodding, but Salem handed the necklaces to the Chamberlain, who signalled for a servant to deliver them. Salem would not miss an opportunity to overeat in the common room of the castle, and after they drained the food stores for nearly an hour, they walked toward the stables to retrieve their horse and cart. A liveried servant approached them. "The First Mother has asked that you be escorted to the garden," he said. "She wishes to speak with you briefly." While surprised, Erin was thrilled. Salem tried to straighten his robe and rope, to no avail, and even stared into a barrel of rainwater to fix his wild hair and pick food out of his beard. The gardens of the castle were bright with the reds, yellows, and purples of spring, and the First Mother awaited them on a marble bench under a flowering plum tree. Her protector, clearly upset at the sight of them, stood behind her, arms folded. They bowed.
"I am sorry to trespass on your time further," she apologized, "but I would like to know your connection with Jen, and what it was you brought him."
"Yes, yes, I'm delighted to serve your worshipful flower of gracefulness," Salem said. "It all—"
"Let me tell this, please,"
Erin requested with a fervent look. Surprisingly, Salem agreed. Erin started when they found Jen face down on the road, and told her everything.
"I think they will be nervous and maybe even frightened," Jen commented to Fenner, as they walked arm in arm through the brightly lit corridors. "Remember that these are simple country people, accustomed to small towns and small places. This all must be terribly overwhelming for them."
Fenner smiled. She wore her hair loose around her shoulders and was dressed in a fetching purple dress embroidered with gold thread.
"I'm sure having you near will comfort them. I look forward to meeting them."
"Is the Shalane coming to this little gathering?"
"She said that nothing could detain her save Shertan himself sitting on her."
"She said that?" Jen asked incredulously. "That doesn't sound like her."
"I couldn't help but think it was something rather like you would say. Whatever the case, I think she, like me, is anxious to hear more about where you came from."
Her smile turned mischievous.
"And what you were like in your younger days, since you aren't very forthcoming. Surely Jen in his 10th year wasn't so polished as he is now."
"I think you will be disappointed. There simply isn't much to tell. Life in a remote lumbering town is hardly inspiration for a ballad or a scandalous story."
Inwardly he began rifling through his memory and found that perhaps there was material for a story or two, though he certainly wouldn't want anyone to hear them, especially not the First Mother and the Shalane.
"Mm-hmm," Fenner teased. "We shall see. Refresh my memory. What were their names again?"
"The best friend I had in Tell was Gant, a woodsman's apprentice. With him will be Ural, his late master's daughter. They were going to be betrothed this past spring and married in the fall. The other three will be the Morwalds. They were Regina's parents, store owners. Their youngest daughter, Maria, will be with them."
"It will be my pleasure to know them. Are you nervous?"
"A little," Jen replied. "A lot has happened since I last saw them. The Morwalds probably don't even know what happened to Regina. I don't know if I can bear telling them."
"You'll do fine," Fenner encouraged.
The luncheon was in a large drawing room, and as they approached, two servants pulled the doors open for them. They stepped aside as two apologetic young ladies bore pots and pans away. The room, decorated in white, blue, and gold, felt wintry despite the emergence of spring. Two high arched windows let in the sun through gauzy light blue drapes. A fire burned cheerily in the fireplace on the east side of the room, and the servants had set up a long table and laden it with breads, cheese, wine, dried fruits, and tender meats. Around that table sat his friends, accompanied by the Shalane and the First Mother, Cadean and Jaren standing guard nearby. As Jen feared, Gant, Ural, and the Morwalds appeared profoundly uncomfortable. Gant fixed his gaze on the table, and Ural examined her hands folded in her lap. George and Rena glanced uncomfortably around the room, seeming lost in all the finery. Only Maria, ensconced sleepily on the Shalane's lap, was clearly at home. Mirel stood by the fire. Jen cleared his throat and all eyes turned. For a moment they all stared at each other, unblinking and unsure of what to do. Gant rose and crossed to where Jen stood, studying him.
"Arezzo! I don't know how,
But it is.
George and Rena stood as well, Rena covering her mouth on seeing the scars that ran across Jen's face. After a few stuttered greetings, the awkwardness broke down and Jen embraced them all and expressed his pleasure at seeing them again. As they approached the table, Jen genuflected to the Shalane and the First Mother and helped Fenner into her chair. Jen was about to take his own when Mirel pulled him next to her by the fire and put her arm around his waist. Gant raised his eyebrows.
Gant? Hero? George? Rena and... Maria, yes,
Mirel said, addressing them individually.
I wanted you to know that Lord Blackshire, whom you knew as the Serf Jen, is very dear to us, and that we owe him a great deal more than we could possibly repay. The Jen you've heard about in all the stories is your friend, and the one who stands before you now. As you are his friends, you are ours. We know circumstances are difficult for you, and it is our intention to ensure that you are well taken care of for his sake. If you are in need, I shall be offended if you do not seek my help. Is that understood?
None of them could meet her eye, settling for mumbling, "Yes, First Mother."
Very good, then,
Mirel continued. I will let Jen sit, and we can talk and eat as we like. Jen pulled Mirel's chair out for her.
I, for one, would like to know more about Lord Blackshire from those who knew him. He says little about himself, you see. Was he always so reserved and quiet?
Gant looked at George to see if he would answer. Finding George studying a piece of bread carefully, Gant ventured a quiet, "No."
"Oh, really?" Mirel prodded. "Quite a talker, then."
"Couldn't get him to shut up, most times,"
Gant replied haltingly, the smiles blooming around the table finally dispelling the uncomfortable silence. Gant, encouraged by his success, continued.
"You see, Jen here knew he was smarter than the rest of us, so he'd go flapping off words nobody in Tell ever heard, just to make sport of us. Like that time you said to Jakes, 'Hey, you're an—' what was it, Jen?"
"An intellectual,"
Jen said, trying to hide his embarrassment.
"And he thought you meant something bad, and chased you for 2 miles.
You see, Jakes was a Shoals, and the Shoalses hated Jen."
And from that point on, there was no stopping him. Jen tried unsuccessfully to change the topic of conversation several times, but Mirel, Fenner, or the Shalane would always, and with apparent delight, steer Gant or George, who had joined in the festivities, back to Jen's exploits. To Jen's dismay, Gant and George remembered every one of his idiotic adventures, and with such engaging women egging them on, they would not stop until they shamed him completely.
"So you had difficulties with authority before your confrontation with Chatan?"
Mirel quipped after Gant told them about the time Jen put a skunk in the Shoals' outhouse.
"Oh, they hated each other," George laughed. "The Shoals have got Jen good, too. There was that time Bernard stuck him in jail for 10 days.
"Wasn't fair, of course, but then again," Gant said. "Jen was in jail?"
Fenner gasped, feigning shock.
"My goodness, I had no idea I was consorting with a common criminal. What was his crime, do tell?"
"Well, we were playing white sticks against Howard and Jakes. They were so bad that Jen and I took to playing one-handed and hopping on one leg just to keep it interesting. Howard and Jakes, though, they don't take to losing real good, so I was in the box and Jakes trips me. I fall and hurt my arm bad, but I get up and keep going, just managing to bat their bone away before turning to go find ours. Jen here sees that it's plain that the Shoals boys are going to find their bone and score before I could, being in so much pain and all, so Jen rears back and throws his bone at Jakes as hard as he can."
"Which is perfectly legal in White Sticks," Jen inserted defensively.
"Yeah. So when Jen throws it, Jakes is facing away from him, bending down to get the bone. Just as he turns around, Jen's bone hits him end first, right square in the mouth."
Fenner and Mirel winced sympathetically.
"So Jakes's teeth come flying out his head, falling on the ground like hail in autumn, and Jakes lands flat on his back. Of course, Jen and I knew when to run, and we ran all the way to the church, Howan hollering at us the whole time and swearing to give us a beating. So we get to the church, and Pure Man Millisham sends Jen back to find Jakes's teeth in the field. And when Jen gets back, Bernard accuses him of assaulting his son and sends him to jail. Never mind that I'm standing there with a busted arm done on purpose by Jakes. Though as for that, Jakes certainly got the worst. He couldn't eat meat after that."
After more smiles and small talk, a silence fell about the table as everyone settled on food rather than stories. Jen felt uncomfortable.
He found the Morwells' eyes on him more than once, the question in their eyes plain. Perhaps they held out hope of Regina's survival, but Jen hoped they knew better.
What did Saddam Khan do to everyone when the war started?
George finally asked. I escaped before it began, Jen answered, so I cannot be sure. Jen steeled himself. He killed people continually through the winter. Your daughter was one of them. I'm sorry. Rena and George bowed their heads, and George pulled his wife close. Maria, thankfully, had fallen asleep. Jen sorrowed with them, thankful, however, that they seemed to have expected his news. Fenner, however, when she saw Jen would offer no more of the story, opened her mouth. The Shalane caught her before she could speak, and Jen could just hear the Shalane say, "It is better this way." Fenner nodded and kept to herself. At length, Mirelle raised her glass.
To Regina. From what I know, a young lady I would have loved to have in my acquaintance.
All joined glasses and drank, and for some time George and Rena shared memories of their daughter, Jen offering what remembrances were his and what comfort he could. Fenner took Jen's hand under the table, and Jen was grateful for her tenderness.
Well, Mirelle said as afternoon slipped toward evening, it is time to have the Shalane in her quarters, and I have several matters to attend to. It is my pleasure to save a little announcement for last. George and Rena, Yurl and Gant, as you may know, I have awarded Jen a living in Blackshire when he comes into his majority, or when I decide I am done with him. I have arranged a living for each of you there, so you can be near your friend when his duties with my daughter are at an end. You can be conveyed there when you like, but you can stay here for as long as it suits you. If Gant and Yurl wish it, I can arrange for the prelate to wed them before they leave.
Gant smiled lopsidedly and turned to Yurl, who smiled in return.
I'll take that as yes, Mirelle grinned. I will send you word soon. I thank you all for shedding a bit more light on Lord Blackshire, and I will be pleased to provide a wedding dinner you won't forget. Now, if you will all excuse my daughter and me.
Everyone rose and bowed, the First Mother smiling at Jen as she left.
I think the First Mother must like you,
Gant said after they had gone.
She has been more kind to me than I deserve, Jen answered. Too kind, by far.